Everybody jump, 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 jump. I said a hip hop, the hibbit of a hip hip hop, you don't stop. Rap, 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 rap it up.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big Sharkle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the Sharkle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. I love it when I get to make friends out of the people that I have in as friends for the wrap. It's great. So we have Jewel Canada Wynn, who is a longtime history, right? You taught history, Jewel, is that right?
History.
And of course, was on city council for a long time. And she was my Democrat connection when I was at the DNC and many other things. So, Jewel, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Kim Klein, who was a longtime teacher of government at Gulf Breeze High School?
Yes. I taught AP Gov. I taught comparative politics, coached the debate team.
Yep.
And I taught American history at different points, too.
But. And that's your degree. And you ran, of course, for state representative against Alex Andrade as a non-party, no-party affiliate, right?
Correct.
Is that how you ran?
Okay. Correct.
I feel like I'm surrounded today. It's great. I have three liberal or liberal-leaning women in the room and me, and it's great. I love that. It makes it for an interesting. Okay, so anyway. With Candy here. So, and I love the, I like that. I think that's always interesting. It's boring to talk to people who always agree with you. You know, that's just, you can talk to yourself that way. Okay, so let's start with, man, I don't know. There's some that are really, you know what? I want to make sure that we talk about this one. There's a school issue that I did not get a chance to talk about on the show, but I had just listened to the Escambia County School Board meeting from last week. And a lot of teachers and or union reps showed up to talk about how in Escambia County, there are two things that the teachers do not have. They do not have bereavement leave as separate from your, you know, you have to use up all of your sick leave or whatever, and then you can get bereavement leave. And they also don't have a duty-free lunch period, which people might not know that term. They might think, like, on a cruise when there's no duty on the tequila. Duty-free just means having no obligation, so you can sit and eat lunch for a half hour, just like, of course, the kids get to do. I absolutely think that the no obligation lunch makes sense. The bereavement leave is a little more, to me, nuanced, because I think that leave is leave is leave is leave, and you know, you shouldn't be paid for not doing work. And so if you have leave that you take as personal days, if you take it for vacation, if you take it for being sick, if you take it for a deceased relative, to me, those are all the same thing. But, you know, I'm willing to be persuaded. So, Jewel, you worked in the Escambia County school system for a long time, right? These seem like, I mean, there's certainly,
you know,
hot issues.
When we talk about leave, I mean, you get X number of days per year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, if you say you're at the lowest end and you get 10 days of leave per year. Now, the way sometimes they do it is you get X number for the first semester and X number for the second semester.
Okay.
And then sometimes if you go over, you can't use the second semester allocation.
Okay.
So it's 37 and a half hours. It used to be. I don't retire. So I can only do the formula that I remember. And so 37 and a half and 37 and a half. So when you really look at that and you talk about leave, that is not a lot of leave. You know, they want you to be in there. Mm-hmm. Bereavement leave.
In part because it's so hard to find replacements
and keep consistency
for the students.
And I can understand that one.
Right.
The one that I think that ticks me the most is not having the duty-free lunch. That is the one that I would fall on my sword
for. And I'm with
for.
You on that one. That one makes no sense to me.
I would fall on my sword for that one. A teacher, after they done did four classes or whatever the number of classes that they did, they need that 30 minutes because you only get 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So many times the teachers have to run errands in there. Sometimes a student would just stop by because they had a problem or issue, and
right.
you cannot turn them. No good teacher would turn them away.
Right.
And then sometimes you get called down to the office to do something on that. So, again, I think the duty-free leave is the one that I would fall on my sword.
The half hour,
for.
Well, and just eat and have your time.
I didn't realize that that was a thing in Escambia County. I taught in Santa Rosa County, mm-hmm. and we didn't, I taught at the high school level for the majority of my career. We didn't have to do anything during lunch period. I mean, our lunch was to ourselves. One of the differences that we did have in Santa Rosa County compared to Escambia was that we didn't have like a dedicated planning period. So you had like, was supposed to be 0 hour at the beginning of the day, which again was the time when you really couldn't get anything done because that's when kids came to make up tests. That's when if you had a parent call you had to take. Mm-hmm. So we taught like 6 out of 6. And that's a difficult thing to do I don't think a lot of people realize that. It's like I used to say, this is the fifth of 6 shows a day
right.
that you have to go in. And then you get to the 6th period and you're like, did I say this already? Because I feel like I've said this six times today, you know. So it's a, you know, that is something that I always felt like, at least from the Santa Rosa County side, that didn't make sense. Like, I felt like teachers do need, like, a dedicated planning period within the day so that they can regroup. Sometimes lesson plans don't work. And you got to go back and say, let me fix this before I go into the next lesson. But when you're teaching 6 out of 6, you don't have that option. You know,
there is no recovery. There's no timeouts, no pauses, no
And we had a dedicated planning period. So teachers did have a planning period.
But Escambia is 7, right? Is it 7 school periods?
6.
It's 6.
I think I remember it is 6. I tried to forget it.
But a school day is... 7 hours, 6.5 hours?
No, it's 6. You have 6 periods.
6 periods, okay.
You have 6 periods today. But that planning period is important. And again, the planning period sometimes is not the planning period.
Because it gets taken up by other things.
It gets taken up by other things. And so, again, you find some teachers are better organizers than others. But sometimes you find yourself being overwhelmed by the fact that if you're going to have to teach as parents. Now, some schools do it differently. Sometimes when the school day begins, there's like this 30 or 40-minute period before school begins. They try to put all teacher conferences during that in there. But sometimes that doesn't work because parents also work as well. And so you try to make it through there. Then, of course, most good teachers will find some way to help their students. They do on their plan. So, again, when you talk about it at the end of the day and you haven't gotten all your papers great.
Well, I want to get to that, too, because, you know, one of the things it's kind of funny in this job. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm on the air for 4 hours. Right. And some people have the idea like you work 4 hours a day.
Huh. Yeah.
I work 11 or 12 hours a day and I'm on the air for 4 hours. But, you know, people don't see it. They don't know the work. And there are some people who do this job, you know, do talk radio and, you know, they're on the air for 4 hours and they work 4 hours and 30 minutes. You know, like there's different levels of prep for all people who do this work. What is it like for a teacher? I've never really thought much. I mean, I was a teacher in college and I know that, you know, we'd be, you know, so many hours in class and then there's hours out of class when you're either prepping, organizing and or grading, which is obviously a fairly time intensive thing. But how many hours a week would you say when you're teaching in the high school, Kim, how many hours a week were you working?
Gosh, at least 50 or more. Mm. And I'll tell you, I mean, there were times when I would take personal days just so I could get caught up on my grading because there is no time during the day to do grading. I read this article in The Atlantic about that we're in a post-literate society now. Mm. And I tie so much of that back into the loss of time for teachers to be able to adequately plan and grade. Mm. Because like when I came in to teaching, I was, you know, just gangbusters about these kids need to write a research paper. They need to go. I'm teaching seniors, juniors and seniors before they go to college. They need to know how to do this.
Absolutely.
So I spent 2 weeks of my grading of my 2 weeks of Christmas vacation was grading those research papers. And you realize, well, okay, my kids were older and it was easier for me, but there's no way that you could expect people to do that. So teachers can't really assign the type of rigorous work that students need. And we saw more and more like over the last 15 years of technology taken over, you know, and that was kind of a push from the state level about technology in the classroom, technology in the classroom. Don't be the sage on the stage. Nobody wants to listen to you. And I'm like, you know, but there's a value in learning how to pay attention and take notes.
Of course. And the thought process to produce an extended argument, a protracted argument that's organized in language is a different kind of skill. So I just want to make sure I heard what you said right, that it sounds like you were saying there's an incentive because of the extraordinary amount of time it takes to grade papers to not assign things that will create that time obligation, so you assign less of the stuff that really students need to develop those language skills.
Well, and
or at least there's an incentive to not do it. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. But I'll tell you what, there's also this mentality in teaching that those of us that were older were like, you just have to come in and expect that you're going to have to do all this work that you're not getting paid for. But the younger kids coming in out of college who have like, you know, $50,000 worth of debt to pay back. They're like, I can't because I have to have a second job in order to pay this back. Yeah. So I can't do all this work for free. And so you had kind of this conflict. And as I got older, I realized, you know, because I would be irritated at the young teachers of like, come on, we did all this. Mm. You have to pay your dues. But then I thought, well, it's not really fair to ask people to work for free.
You wouldn't do that. I'll get you in just a second, Jewel. Let me get a quick pause. Candy has traffic on the fives.
This is brought to you by Anderson Subaru and not showing any slowdowns or delays right now. I'm not sure if that that thing was fixed downtown, but it looks like it may have been since traffic is flowing more smoothly. 437-1620, if you see that accident or slowdown. Candy with traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Candy. It reminds me what you were saying, Kim, of when I was teaching at the college level. I made a decision early in my teaching that I was not going to correct punctuation, grammar, word use. I was really just grading papers the way I had assigned them. I was always grading was either pass, fail on every element. And so all I had to do was basically skim the paper to see if they grasped the concept that they needed to grasp, because I knew that if I was going to actually correct grammar and rhetoric and teach them how to be better writers, that it would take four times as long to grade that. So I saved myself that trouble. But of course, I recognized in the process that I was allowing that to slip through and it wasn't getting improved. Jewel, your average work week?
My average work week was, like, some years I would have 180 students. And so that's a lot of students to grade papers. And that was taking papers at home. The requirement was that you had to make contact. No student should be failing in your class if you have not made contact with a parent.
Okay.
So that meant that you had to go set time out to do these parents' conferences. And they told you all these crazy
stories
about, about why their student was, is here it is, almost the end of the semester, and they did not know their baby has a zero and didn't do any work. And so you're trying to do the very best that you can when you have 180 students and you have to grade papers. The research part of it, we had this policy years ago is that in social studies, you were going to teach writing, and when you taught the writing and you were getting ready to do a research paper, then you contacted English teachers. And so the English teacher would try to help you out in making sure that the kids paid attention to punctuality. When I taught world geography, I counted spelling. As I counted spelling, and then I told them, it's just no reason you live in Florida and you cannot spell Florida. Make me understand.
You're so mean, Jewel. How dare you?
You know, why you can't spell Florida, and why do you not know Tallahassee is the capital of Florida and not Miami? Yeah. So I had a problem with that. And so I would count spelling, and they would all get upset because you knew I meant Florida, you knew I meant Tallahassee, you knew I meant, you had to do that. And so you always got this kickback because you didn't give points for the attempt, But, you know,
And we don't even teach geography anymore, which is so, like.
Tell me, wait, what? What do you mean?
We do not teach geography anymore.
No. Say it again. You got to be kidding.
We do not teach geography anymore.
In classes? In Escambia and Santa Rosa County, we don't teach geography at any level?
They go west on Interstate 10.
Come up to the mic a little bit.
The first state that they get to is Mississippi.
No, come on.
I'm just saying.
They don't have to memorize capitals. They don't learn places, Europe, South America, anything.
None of that, which is unfortunate.
But why? Why don't they teach? Is it because other things crowded out? Or?
Yes.
It's crowded out.
Science and math became the most important thing after there was a whole report that came out during the Bush administration, A Nation at Risk, which drove like the whole testing thing, right? Yeah. But it was this whole thing that we were so far behind on science and math. And for those of us who taught English or social studies, and to me, social studies got really pushed to the bottom. When I went to high school, I graduated in 1987, it was all the football coaches that taught the history classes and the social studies classes, and it was all a textbook pushed in front of you. And I'll tell you how bad it was. Like, I went to college, and this was in 1987, not 1967.
Yeah.
I didn't know, I had no idea who Martin Luther King was. I had no idea about the civil rights movement. I hadn't learned any of that in high school. Hadn't even talked about it. And so, you know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff that gets missed.
I can't get my brain around the idea that we don't teach geography because,
teach history when nobody knows
they don't know where things are, right, of course.
They don't understand the world.
It's like when I learned a couple years ago that we don't put driver's ed kids out on the road in actual cars. I thought, what are we doing? How can you not? That's an essential thing.
Students are people who believe that the United States is the center of the world. It is not the center of the world. It is a part of the world. It's a part, and everything is connected. So whatever happens in China, whatever happens in Australia, whatever happens on the African continent or in Europe, we are all connected. And I used to use the example of pandemics. I said you could, there could be a pandemic in on that continent of Africa somewhere, and within 24 hours, it's all over.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The all over the world. It's all over the U.S.
So I there's a part of me that knows that people are ignorant of geography, but I thought it was just the normal thing of where, we learn it and we forget it. Mm-hmm. And I know that American news doesn't really focus on international things very much, but I'm starting to think that every time you do a news story on Los Angeles, you should have a map of the U.S. Here's where it is. And every time you do a story on South Korea, you should have a map of the world. And here's where, like, I don't know something because it's hard. How do you process any of that if people don't know? Okay, I'm just.
The legislature eventually mandated that financial literacy. But
right.
If you had a cap, I don't know if Gabriel's had it, but we used to have a class here in Escambia County called Life Management Skills.
It was something like that. I can't remember. I never taught that. I, like, lived in fear of teaching an economics class.
And so,
it's like, you know, I mean.
No, not going. And so you've taught financial literacy the life management skills. And you had the bankers and everybody mm-hmm. come in. And then they got away with that. Again, it was an elective. It was something they could get rid of for the technology advances, for the science, for the STEM program.
See, I think that's a very useful thing, right? Basic life skills kind of stuff.
Even if you incorporate it, I used to try to incorporate it into my government class. Like, I had a lady from, do you remember the Fortas Institute? I don't know if you guys.
Yeah.
I had a lady from Fortas that used to come in and talk to some of my regular government classes. And she would do this thing where she gave everybody a certain amount of money. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, how much do you think that it costs to live when you're moving out? You guys are all graduating next year. How much is rent? I don't know, $200 a month. You know,
what about
a car? Well, what I pay for gas. Well, what about insurance? And when they start adding it all up, you would see like their eyes were like saucers because they had no idea. And that is something that, you know, we've kind of, I think collectively.
And parents could and should, but often do not.
We do not. We have raised,
infantilize. Yeah.
Thank you. But we keep our kids young way too long, and I'm guilty of that. Like, I was a Gen X kid, so I raised myself.
Right.
Essentially, you know. I mean, I was latchkey from.
Yeah, I had a key. My mom worked, and my parents were divorced. That's right. Yeah.
You know, but today our kids, we kind of wrap them in bubble wrap and expect that.
We got a text in here from somebody. This will just break your heart. But I had a student employee in a master's degree program at FSU who thought Orlando was a major seaport because she had gone on a Disney cruise with her parents.
I did want to mention something and go back to teachers.
Yeah, please.
And retention of teachers.
Because I hadn't intended this. I didn't intend to get two teachers in here and talk about it. But this is why I like doing this, because you never know what you're going to get. And there are so many aspects of education in both counties that I think don't get the attention they deserve. It's a hard topic to penetrate for me as an outsider, not a teacher. You know, and what you might know about, you know, Northview is not the same as what you know about Pine Forest or Gulf Breeze High or Pace. And so it's just hard. I feel like it's very hard to get enough information to cover as a topic. So I'm glad to have you guys talking about this. Jewel, you're going to say, though. Go ahead.
We need to go back to tenure. In the state,
is there not tenure for K-12?
No, you don't have tenure anymore. You don't have tenure because it used to be 3 years and you could get tenure. They got rid of tenure, court case, all this type of nonsense. And so, here you go. You have this bright-eyed student graduating from school coming, and they want to teach. And so, there's no guarantee of a job for all of the things that you have. But I think it was 3 years. I would like to see 5 years. If I was going to be a state legislator, that's what I would push tenure at least at 5 years, because you begin to keep your teachers.
Right.
And education, you should look at the percentage of young or beginning teachers who do not stay.
Well, and that's, I want to talk about that, because you said something before we got on the air that I want to make sure we talk about. Hang on for just a second.
Cycle.
Candy's got last traffic on the five.
This is quick and there's nothing happening. You're fine.
Perfect.
437-1620.
Okay, so before we came on the air, we were talking about teacher training, and that there's no such thing as a teacher, what did you call it? Not in service.
You had to do an internship.
Internship.
You used to have to do an internship.
That's right.
Internship. And an internship was great, simply because you could go say, I want to teach elementary school. I want to teach high school. I want to teach middle school.
Yeah.
And you did 6 or 8 weeks. I think when I did it in the 80s, it was 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And you went to a school and you had a mentor,
someone
who helped you through that. But as the years have gone by, we have gotten away from creating that. Some teachers shouldn't even be teachers. You know, they should not come. The classroom should not be an experiment for them, for their career.
Right. I totally agree.
And I do think that...
So wait, so just to be clear, we don't do internships now?
It's not
student
required.
Teaching, no.
Student,
it's
student
not,
teaching?
Not unless you're getting... Teaching. If you're getting your, let's say, like I got a minor in professional education, and part of it was that I had to do a student teaching for my minor. But what's happened is, you know, trying to get warm bodies in, they really have lowered the standards in order to teach. And so, you know, they a lot of times get people in before their certification is even done.
Like they don't even have to. They have to do it eventually,
progress,
right? Okay.
And they drop them right into the classroom, and there is no scaffolding. I'm not in favor of tenure. I feel like there's a lot of other things that could be done to make the. I do think the job needs to become more attractive. I think there needs to be scaffolding for new teachers. I think that, you know,
by scaffolding you mean guidance and
safeguards. Yeah, like you get assigned a mentor teacher when you come in.
Yeah, things to help you succeed, right?
And if you had like for instance in Santa Rosa County, you know, if there was designated planning periods during the day where you could assign a teacher to go and sit in on a more experienced teacher and how they did it.
Yeah, to observe and learn, right?
I'm going
to
tell you, man. I felt like I went into it. I didn't start teaching until I was, you know, my early 40s, and I had already had kids of my own, and I felt like I knew what I was doing, and I almost quit the first year because I was working probably 60 hours a week trying to get everything done, and there is an impossible amount of busy work that gets forms we have to fill out and boxes we have to check that mean nothing. I mean, really, that everyone is just it is. There are so many inconsistencies and inefficiencies, I think, in the administration of teaching. And I'm not going after administrators because they have a tough job, too. But I do think that we do have to start thinking about how to make this job attractive, you know, so that young people do want to come in and say, come on in.
The
and I think tie it to get paying off student loan debts.
The number of teachers, you know, who express a sentiment something like this, I love teaching, I love my kids, I hate this job, and it makes me want to quit the job because the job is so overwhelming. I was hearing that repeatedly at the, you know, school board meeting. And, like, I know when I taught college, I mean, you know, they give you like a 3-hour kind of, here's kind of what teaching looks like, and now go, you do what you've learned and seen from you. There's nothing in terms of preparing people to teach, which is why you get some terrible teachers.
Even adding on, if they didn't want to go back to the tenure, because a lot of seasoned teachers are getting ready to go. So you have to find a way to keep them and keep them, because they're the ones that are going to be the mentors. But again, teacher pay. I told someone, I was a dean here in Escambia County, so I got a supplement. Mm-hmm. So if you weren't a dean, you didn't get that supplement as a dean. I could work 27 hours in 27 years. I worked 27 years in this county and could make $60,000 a year.
Well, and
that's 27 years.
After 27 years, right, which is a lot.
You couldn't make that. So
we are so totally out of time. I'm sorry. So Kim Klein, Jewel Canada Wynn, thank you both for coming in. This is fascinating. I may try to schedule you guys again sometime because there's so much of this we can talk about that's important. Have a great weekend. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.